Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. 34 after. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And I think you'll like it. If you decide you don't like it, it's easier to unsubscribe than it is to subscribe. So check that out and all the other things you can do there at Entrepreneurial Nirvana, which is my website. And I think you'll like it, the stuff you find there. You can find out more about our Brain Trust members. You can listen to archives and read articles to your little heart's content. Check it out when you get a chance. I'm excited about this half hour because we're going to be talking to a couple of friends of mine, Rebecca Bainick, who, along with her mother, founded a company called Neutral Posture. She's with us, and we got some important things to talk about, along with our good friend Mike Menzies, president of Eastern Bank and Trust. Rebecca Bainick, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you back. Mike Menzies, good to have you back, buddy.
James, thank you, sir. Always good to be with you.
It's good to have you back. And Rebecca's been with us before. Mike's been with us many times before. Rebecca, say hi to Mike.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Rebecca. I didn't know that Jim had started a dating service over the radio.
That's what it is. That's what we're doing here. Okay. Now, folks, do you know about the Google IPO and how it made those two guys rich, made a bunch of their employees rich? You know about all the IPO crazes of the 90s and how many people got rich and how many people are still getting rich on stock options and because the company went public and all that kind of thing. And Rebecca and Mike, you and I, we all three of us know companies that literally they go to bed, the owners go to bed at night thinking and they wake up in the morning thinking about how can I get my company public? How can I cash in? How can I? Well, they can't wait. I mean, it's like the IPO, the initial public offering, is the holy grail. It's the thing that they're living and dying for. They can't wait to get there. Well, both of you have been there, and you decided to come back. And you both of you have operated. Rebecca, your company, you took your company public. Mike, when you took over as president of Eastern Bank and Trust, it was public. And yet you decided, both of you decided that that wasn't the world that you wanted to live in. And what I'd like to do, I'm going to let ladies first. Ladies go first here, Mike. Rebecca, tell us about the process of, a little bit about the process of why, well, actually start out telling us why you decided to go public, and then we'll talk about why you decided not to be public.
Well, we decided to go public in 1997. The stock market was a pretty hot place to be. It was before the real run-up of the stock market, and we thought that was going to be a good way for us to really be able to grow and expand our business. If we could take the company public and then use paper to go out and make acquisitions and things like that, we really thought that was going to help catapult the sales.
It was going to give you access to a new channel of capital, wasn't it?
Exactly. Well, when we went public, we were a little too small to really be a player, and the stock market just catapulted into a new level right after we did go public. And so we were not only a microcap, we were a micro-microcap. Couldn't get a lot of interest in the stock, and the paper was, we went public at $6, and over the next couple of years watched the stock devalue down to about $1 a share, which basically said we had a $20 million company that was worth $4 million in our market cap. And we knew that was a little, just a little off. And we were a real company. We were out there fighting against all these dot-coms that really didn't even have anything to offer. And here we were, a real company with real product and a real building and real employees, and just couldn't get the interest in the stock that we needed. So we turned around and bought it back.
All right. Now, I'm going to ask you to tell us in a little bit why you decided, why you went through that process. Now, Mike, when you came, Mike Menzies, when you came to Eastern Bank and Trust as the president, the bank was already public, wasn't it?
Yes, we were public by definition, meaning we had over 300 stockholders. We had 680 stockholders, but we still were a very small company in terms of number of stockholders and the amount of trading. So we weren't, quote, publicly traded. We were
right.
A stock that was called a workout stock, meaning the only way you would sell the stock would be for a broker to go shake the tree and find someone to buy it.
Find somebody, or maybe you would know about somebody who wanted to sell, and you'd tell somebody else, then they might go to that person and buy it from them.
Exactly.
That kind of thing. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more with our good friends Rebecca Bainick and Mike Menzies about taking their company public, having a public company, and then taking it back private. And we're going to talk, get them to tell us more about why they would do that and why they didn't like being public. Tony Till, stay with us. We'll be right back.
The ships roll in, and then I watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock.
We're back. It is 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friends Rebecca Bainick, the president of Neutral Posture, and Mike Menzies, the president of Eastern Bank and Trust. And folks, before I go any further, I want them to give their websites out, and I got to tell you a little bit about Rebecca's chair. Rebecca, give us your website, please.
It's igoergo.com, igoergo.com.
All right. Now tell us what we'll find when we get there.
We have an amazing website that just got redone, so I just have to brag about it a little bit. And you can find all the different chairs that are on there, all the price lists, everything that you could look for, all the research that backs up the chair and tells you why it's going to be so good for you and why it's going to help you, and lots of different models to choose from.
Well, I'll tell you, folks, I own three of her chairs. I sit in one of them myself, and two of my employees sit in the other two. And I'll tell you, I've never seen anything like this chair. And this isn't, you know, she's not paying me to say this, folks. I'm telling you, Rebecca, this, I don't know what kind of potion, what kind of magic you've woven into this chair. But this, there is absolutely no fatigue at the end of the day. And my employees are saying the same thing. This is an incredible chair. And I can't imagine not having this chair in my, you know, in my office. I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for making this chair because, you know, I'm usually in my office at least every day, 7 days a week to some degree. And so this thing is incredible. And I have to actually tell some of my employees to go home. They don't want to leave the chair. Mike, give us your website, please.
Eastern Bank and Trust, all spelled out, .com. And you know, Jim, I must admit, ever since you started sitting in that chair, your intellectual prowess has expanded dramatically.
Yeah, I can see. I'm glad you noticed that, Mike. I'm glad.
I don't know why.
My IQ's gone up, I think, since I started sitting in Rebecca's chair. Okay, Mike, let's talk about the bank. Now, you just told us about the bank was public. It was a public bank because of the way it was structured. But what was wrong with that? Why did you decide to become a private bank again?
Well, really, it was very simple, Jim. The banking industry, as you know, is heavily regulated. And regulatory burden, the cost of conforming with regulations, has grown exponentially, even more so after 9/11, Enron, Sarbanes-Oxley, and all the new SEC requirements. And those costs grew aggressively at a time when the industry became significantly more competitive, where margins shrank, where expense management was critical. So the bank reached that simple crossroad of choice of whether we were to grow really aggressively to generate the revenues and the volumes necessary to support a dramatically increased overhead burden, or whether we didn't grow aggressively and we shrank our expense structure. And one obvious alternative was to delist. Mm-hmm. It was to get out from underneath the horrific, and that was an understatement, burden of conforming with SEC reporting requirements and the ominous expenses that the Sarbanes-Oxley Act suggested would come to our company within the next 2 or 3 years.
So you either had to acquire other banks or grow into new markets or
right.
get really aggressive or not, and you chose to go the other way. Now, let me ask you this question. Does doing what you've done make you any less of a potential acquisition for a bigger bank so that the shareholders of the bank could one day cash in?
I don't know the answer to that. I think that is more a function of our market and how well we do in our market. The industry is going through aggregation along with every other industry in this country. Consolidation and aggregation are very much driving the business models of this nation. And it's very, very difficult to be a tweener and compete as a tweener.
Right.
You either need to be extremely big with high volumes and low margins, or small enough to sell unique and valued service like Rebecca. I mean, Rebecca
yeah.
has a niche product
mm-hmm.
That is a focused product. She's not selling an everyday desk chair. She's selling something that has other value-added components to it.
And I'm going to come back to the expense with you in a minute, Mike, but I want to get to Rebecca. Rebecca, tell us a little bit more about what you were going through and what your thought process. Now, here you were already public. I mean, you were already reached what a lot of people thought was the Holy Grail, but yet you weren't happy.
Well, we really weren't happy. We were trading on NASDAQ, and, of course, that's where you all always want to be. And there were a couple of things that really made it, as you put it, not the Holy Grail, in that we were paying around $250,000 a year just to stay in compliance with our SEC filings, with our shareholder reports, our board meetings, shareholder meetings, all those things, outside auditors. It's just a
which was taken away from your ability to manage the company and really grow it in a quality way, wasn't it?
Exactly. And then you also are dealing with an outside board of directors. These are people that, you talk to or see on a face-to-face basis 4 or 5 times a year that are influencing how you run your business.
Yeah.
And that was probably the biggest reason for us that we wanted to take the company private, in that mm-hmm. we felt that being public and having outsiders having such a big role in what we could and couldn't do was actually hindering us from growing.
That's it. Folks, if you're an entrepreneur, That's a forewarned, forearmed statement that Rebecca just gave you. Mike, as we go to a break, what was the expense that you had? Can you say what your expenses were for compliance, what the ticket was?
We grew from maybe $20,000 to $80,000 a year over a four-year period of time just in reporting and compliance.
Wow.
So that was two jobs in our market.
Yeah. Stand by. Quick break. Ten Till. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Rebecca Banick. She's with Neutral Posture. Her website is iGoErgo. And Mike Menzies, he's the president of Easton Bank and Trust. Put a .com on the end of that, and that's his website. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Mike Menzies and Rebecca Banick are our guests. And I encourage you to check out their websites. And folks, I want to do you a favor. I encourage you to go to Rebecca's website and igoergo.com and look at her chairs and see if you can't figure out a way to of course they can't really buy them from you, can they, Rebecca? They got to go through a distributor, right?
Right, but we have over 1,200 dealers across the country, so
you got a list of them on your website too, don't you?
Well, we have all of our reps. We have 75 reps across the country, and they can click on their state, and it'll tell them who they can call to find out where to go and buy a chair.
Okay. You need to go check this out, folks. It's incredible. If you work a lot at a chair, at a computer, you need to check these out. So that's my favorite to you today. Okay, Rebecca. Now, Mike, you spent your compliance bill went from $20,000 to $80,000, and Rebecca, you were spending $250,000 a year on compliance, and it just was too expensive, plus you were being restrictive. I thought, Mike, what Rebecca said, you work with a lot of small business owners. Many of them probably would like to reach the brass ring of going public. I thought what she said about how restrictive being public made her and how it limited her ability to move and to be creative and to grow her business, that's a forewarned, forearmed kind of statement for you, some of your customers, isn't it?
Well, what Rebecca's saying, sadly, is that the new regulatory environment, SEC, Sarbanes-Oxley, and the like, has placed boards in a position where instead of finding ways to take risk for the purpose of making money with capital, they're placed in that uncomfortable position of finding ways to limit risk, because directors of these companies have a 30-06 pointed at their head. And I don't know that we yet know the answer to this issue, because surely the Enron debacle brought a new awareness about corporate corruption. But for some reason, when we went to deal with the legislation of morality, we absolutely stepped on the little guy when it comes to burden, and we scared the hell out of the board members. I mean, the directors of these small companies are really challenged because they are placed in the role of being fiduciaries and exercising mostly corporate governance judgment, rather than how do we find ways to take capital and expand its value in the economy.
And Rebecca, all that happened in the face of having laws that were already in place that could have taken care of that, didn't it?
Exactly. I think that there were plenty of regulations in place already, and then they dump all this other stuff on top of you, which really, if you're going to have people that are going to cheat, it doesn't matter how many laws you put on the books, they're still going to cheat.
Rebecca, when if somebody came to you and said, hey, I heard you used to be public, I really would like to be public. What's your advice? What would you say?
I would tell them to run as fast as they could in the other direction.
Run away. would you really? I mean, would that be your default answer, or would you say, well, you know, or would you say, well, maybe it wasn't for me, but it might be for you?
I think it's going to depend on the company and what they have to offer and how they think that they can market the company in the public market. And it really depends on how much time you want to devote to being public versus how much time you want to spend growing your business. Or if your ultimate goal is to get the money, then just sell it.
Was there anything good for your company about being public?
I think the best thing about it for us was that when you say that you went public and then you were able to take the company private,
right,
that we did that without borrowing any money, I think that it does speak to our financial strength.
Right.
And, you know, when you're a $20 million company playing in a marketplace with companies that are over $2 billion,
right.
We need that kind of help to say that we are big enough to play the game.
So it was a badge of honor, but it was an expensive badge of honor, wasn't it?
Very expensive.
Mike, was there anything good about your bank being public?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it gave us some recognition in a very small market. We had 680 people who were ambassadors for the company, and there was value to that. But not unlike Rebecca, the banking industry, as it rolls up, just this year, I've seen two more $1 trillion companies come into the industry with Citicorp. We have Bank of America, and now the J.P. Chase Bank One, and those are huge, huge enterprises. They really are, and it changes the landscape competitively.
Right. Rebecca and Mike, thank you very much for being here. Both of you did a great job. Thank you for giving us these words of wisdom from people who used to be public and now they're private. And we appreciate it very much. Rebecca Banik with Neutral Posture, IgoErgo.com. Thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you very much.
Mike Menzies, president of Eastern Bank and Trust, EasternBankandTrust.com. Thanks, Mike. See you later.
Okay, James.
All right. Got to go. Bye-bye. For this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I will be back tomorrow.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.